Good afternoon, Tri-States. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped, brought to you in part by DUPACO and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. This is Friday, December the 2nd. You're listening to the melodious voice of Ken in his regular Friday reader seat, reading from the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And we begin with our first story on page one from above the fold. McCoy to expand, construct facility. A Dubuque-based trucking company plans to construct a new 78,000-square-foot headquarters and create 60 additional full-time jobs contingent on the approval of state and local incentives. McCoy Group aims to begin construction next spring and complete the project by summer 2025. The facility will be located at 2099 South Park Court at the site of the company's current headquarters in the Key West area. Jim Kane, Vice President of Facilities for McCoy Group, said the company seeks to expand following acquisitions that have led to significant growth and customer demand, including the purchase of WW Transport Incorporated, based in Burlington, Iowa, at the end of 2020, and Minnesota-based Bay and Bay Transfer Company this fall. "We have been growing all phases of our business," Kane said. "We're hoping that it's a facility that makes people want to come and work for us." The new building would be double the size of McCoy Group's current headquarters. Kane said construction would not impact the company's corporate operations. He said the company still is determining the anticipated cost of the project, and its completion is contingent on approval of financial incentives from Iowa Economic Development Authority and City of Dubuque, along with final approval from the company's board of directors. The Iowa Economic Development Authority will consider the McCoy Group's application in December, while the Dubuque City Council is expected to consider the city incentives during its meeting on December 19th, states a press release from the company. If the project moves forward, McCoy Group plans to hire an additional 18 employees by 2025 and another 42 by 2027, bringing the total number of employees in Dubuque to 280, Kane said. Those positions primarily will be focused on corporate divisions, including positions in accounting and human resources. Kane said the new headquarters will be an 11.5-acre campus and include several new amenities for employees, including multiple cafeterias and a workout center. The company has purchased multiple properties surrounding its current headquarters to fulfill the vision of establishing a campus where employees can use outdoor space and events such as food truck days can be held. "The response has been very positive," Kane said. "We surveyed our group on some of the amenities that they want put into the project. The properties purchased by McCoy Group in the area include the former site of an Econo Lodge Inn and Suites that has since been torn down. If the state and local incentives are not secured, the company could fall back to a less ambitious project to expand its current headquarters," Kane said. "We are still early in the process," he said. "At that point, we might expand the existing building instead of going new." McCoy Group was founded in 1958 by Robert McCoy in Schulzburg, Wisconsin. Still family-owned and operated, it is now the parent company of six subsidiaries, transportation companies, Foodliner Inc., and Questliner Inc., Truck Country, Stoops Freightliner Quality Trailer, McCoy Construction and Forestry, and WW Transport, Inc. In total, the company employs about 4,000 people and operates 26 Freightliner truck dealerships, 16 John Deere Construction and Forestry dealerships, and a bulk transportation division with 40 locations across the U.S. and Mexico. Rick Dickinson, president and CEO of Greater Dubuque Development Corporation, described McCoy Group as one of Dubuque's best-kept secrets and praised the proposed project. The notion that they are not only keeping their headquarters here, but expanding is great news for Dubuque, he said. Should it happen, it should be a beautiful gateway into the community. Our next piece, New Habitat for Humanity store helps fund projects. And with it, we have this picture of two people dressed with blue t-shirts putting up some signage. And beneath it, it's inside of a store, and beneath it reads the caption, Volunteers Mark and Nancy Olert prepare to hang up a sign at Habitat for Humanity Restore on Chauvenel Road in Dubuque on Thursday. And our article reads, standing beside a bathtub, a sink, and a pile of plumbing products, volunteer Mark Olert turned around to take in the cabinets, chairs, lamps, ladders, and more that fill the new Dubuque and Jackson County's Habitat for Humanity Restore. If you need something for your house, it's probably here somewhere, he said with a grin. The Restore, located at 4949 Chauvenel Road in Dubuque, held a soft opening in early November, with store officials planning to hold a formal grand opening in January. It is one of more than 900 Habitat for Humanity Restores across the country that sell donated building materials, furniture, and other housing materials at discounted prices, with profits from the sales helping to fund the nonprofit's home building projects for local families in need. Almost every shopper has had a story about another Restore they've been to in the area and how excited they are to have one here in town as well, said Erica Haugen, executive director of the local nonprofit. Plans to bring a Restore to Dubuque began in 2019, according to Rachel Dack, former chair of the Restore committee, who helped spearhead the process. Construction kicked off in late 2021 at the Restore's 8,200-square-foot space in a building that also houses the business First Supply. During the planning stages, the Dubuque Restore received a large donation of furniture and building materials from the Sisters of Charity of the Blessed Virgin Mary at Mount Carmel Bluffs in Dubuque. Those items gave the Restore a full inventory to sell at various pop-up sales that raised funds for the opening, including a three-day pre-opening sale in May. Dak said Habitat for Humanity also benefited from significant donor support and about $90,000 in grant funding from Dubuque Metropolitan Area Solid Waste Agency, Sustainable Dubuque, and Iowa Department of Natural Resources. Currently, the Restore employs an interim store manager, Susan Loeffler, and seeks to hire a donation specialist. The remaining tasks of receiving, processing, preparing, and pricing donations are completed by a crew of about 25 volunteers. Among them are Mark and Nancy Olert, who said they volunteer at the store about once a week. On Thursday, they were hanging bright blue signs to designate the various items offered at the store, such as hardware and electronics. We really believe in Habitat for Humanity, and I'm proud of the tradition of Habitat in this area, Mark said. Anything we can do to support getting people into houses they can afford, that's powerful for me. Dak said the Restore offers a place to divert materials such as unused lumber from a construction project or a still functional door that was replaced after a homeowner wanted an upgrade. We end up landfilling materials that are perfectly good and usable because there's not a place to take them, she said. This is a place that residents and commercial business construction can donate these items. And those of us who love to shop that way get both the joy of the find and the cost savings. Haugen said most of the new items at the Restore are sold for about 50% to 70% of retail cost, with prices further reduced for items with wear and tear. In addition to offering cost savings and environmental benefits, Haugen said the ReStore helps Dubuque and Jackson County's Habitat for Humanity diversify its funding streams and increase its visibility in the community. The nonprofit has had a presence in Dubuque for 31 years and has served 31 families through home building and home repair projects during that time. Haugen said proceeds from the ReStore hopefully will help the organization expand the number of families it can serve per year. The store really helps us to bring some visibility to the work that we're doing, as well as helping us share our mission for doing this sustainably, doing this long-term, and building capacity for our communities, she said. Our final front page piece, ALC event, mix of food, fun, friends. And we have a large picture of a young student cutting the hair of an adult. Let's see what the caption reads here. Social studies teacher Greg White gets his hair cut by Connor Caparos, 15, after Connor won a raffle at the Alternative Learning Center's monthly mixer at Dubuque Community Schools Alta Vista campus on Thursday. Well, I know Mr. White quite well. It's interesting to see him getting his hair cut. But our article reads, about once a month, 15-year-old Alex Rabolo eats dinner with his teachers. The sophomore at Alternative Learning Center in Dubuque is a regular attendee at a new monthly mixers program the school started this fall, during which staff in the ALC's 9th and 10th grade program prepare a meal for students and their families. On Thursday, Alex brought his mother, Dreema Hefner, and his 9-year-old niece, Isabella Carner, to the Dubuque Community School District's Alta Vista campus to enjoy hot dogs, loaded baked potatoes, and cookies at the program's December mixer. I get to come and eat with my friends and classmates and get to know more about them in the process, Alex said. He and his family were among a group of about 25 people who gathered for Thursday's meal. As English teacher Angie Noel tended to a row of steaming slow cookers, students cracked jokes with their friends and parents, unloaded bags of toys and board games to entertain siblings and children who were also in attendance. Staff members report that the monthly mixers have had a positive impact on the academic success of the about 30 students enrolled in the program. Our focus this year has really been on building community, especially with the struggles of the pandemic when we had students in and out so frequently over the past few years, said Greg White, who teaches social studies in the 9th and 10th grade program. We wanted to make school a place students were both accountable to and accountable for. The program's primary way of developing community has been through the monthly mixers, in addition to other team-building activities, such as a group field trip to the ropes course at Four Mounds Foundation in Dubuque last month. White said that this fall, the program has had lower numbers of students failing classes, in addition to improved grades and attendance, as compared to prior fall semesters. While he noted that these positive signs can't be entirely attributed to the mixers, he said he thinks the monthly get-togethers have made a difference. We're seeing that the kids feel a stronger connection to this place, and when they have a stronger connection, they tend to achieve at higher rates, he said. And for another thing, students that historically don't attend school, that have historically struggled with attendance, are choosing to be here at school outside of school hours. That tells us something. As an added twist for Thursday's mixer, White, who has been growing out his hair for the past 3 years to donate to nonprofit organization Wigs for Kids, gave one student in attendance the honor of cutting his long locks. For every assignment completed and turned in over the past month, students in the 9th and 10th grade program received a raffle ticket to be entered into a drawing to do the honors. The lucky winner, sophomore Connor Caparos, quickly got to work with a pair of scissors and electric clippers. "Do I get to cut his eyebrows too?" he asked with a mischievous grin as he chopped. "No such luck," White replied wryly. Connor, 15, has attended all three mixers this fall and said he feels the events have helped him feel closer with his teachers. His mother, Robin Capros, attended for the first time Thursday night. As a parent, I enjoy getting to be around the teachers and meet the other students that he's in class with daily, she said, as Connor dug into his hot dog. John Peters, 15, used the clippers to neatly finish the barbering job before filling a plate of his own. The sophomore, who is in his first year at Alternative Learning Center, said he enjoys the camaraderie that the mixers provide. I can come hang with my friends and eat really good food and make better connections with my teachers, he said. We're able to connect with them person to person, not teacher to student. That, according to math teacher Anthony Tuttle, is precisely the point of the program. We have families in need of a meal or an opportunity for their kids to come and feel welcome, he said. We want to help students build that relationship with us so they see us not just as teachers, but people with families and lives, people they can connect with. Now we turn to our page for Dubuque and the Tri-States. At the top of the fold there, we have kidnapping charge added for Dubuque man. A Dubuque man arrested last month for allegedly assaulting a woman and threatening her with a gun now is charged with kidnapping her and potentially faces life in prison. Jacob R. Mullins, 24, of Dubuque, now faces charges in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County of first-degree kidnapping, domestic assault impeding airflow causing injury, willful injury, domestic assault with display or use of a weapon, child endangerment, first-degree harassment, and domestic assault with injury. Mullins has not yet entered a plea. The first-degree kidnapping charge, which is a Class A felony, was filed Wednesday. A conviction of a Class A felony in Iowa comes with a mandatory sentence of life in prison without parole. Court documents state that Dubuque police responded to Mullins' residence on November 20th after receiving a call about a woman being held against her will, with the man involved having a handgun. Those involved were identified as Mullins and Justina M. Denlinger, 21, of Lamont, Iowa. The two have a one-year-old child together who was also in the residence. Denlinger told officers that Mullins grabbed her and pushed her onto a couch after she arrived at his residence at about 5 p.m. November 19th. Mullins then began listening to music and waving a handgun around, pointing it at both Denlinger and their child. During this time, Mullins also was loading and unloading the gun. Mullins then slapped Denlinger across the face, causing her to black out, documents state. Mullins then placed his foot on Denlinger's face while she was on the ground. Mullins then strangled Denlinger to the point she could not breathe. This caused multiple bruises to Denlinger's neck. Mullins then went through Denlinger's phone and found messages from another man, causing him to duct tape Denlinger to a chair and hit her, documents state. The two then went to a nearby gas station, and Mullins became upset when Denlinger tried to show an employee her injuries, documents state. Once they returned to the apartment, Mullins duct-taped Denlinger to the chair again, documents state. Mullins then struck Denlinger with the handgun. This caused injuries to Denglinger's lip and swelling to her face. Documents state the two then fell asleep after Denlinger asked for NyQuil. After Mullins left the residence in the morning, Denlinger called her mother for help. When Mullins spoke with officers, he reported slapping and punching Denlinger a few times, documents state. He also told officers that he taped Denlinger to a chair and grabbed a gun, as well as threatened to kill himself and Denlinger. Documents state that officers found a large amount of duct tape in a trash can, as well as a handgun. Court documents related to the kidnapping charge state that Mullins did kidnap Denlinger, and as a consequence, she suffered serious injury or was intentionally subjected to torture. Our next tri-state piece, Cascade makes strides while raising funds for new library. The City of Cascade has made strides in its fundraising for a new public library building, totaling around $2.5 million of the $3.5 million needed. Now, under the title of Cascade's Next Chapter, the City Council, Library Board, and dedicated subcommittees are working to raise the rest of the funds. While the idea of a new library had been batted around for years, the dream started down the path to reality in late summer 2021 when the Library Board and FEH Design held spark sessions to assess the requirements a library would have to fulfill to meet the community's needs. The results determined the needed library size at 7,600 square feet. Initially, the included community room was intended to hold 50 people, but feedback from the sessions expanded the plans to hold 75. The primary location choice was a space currently occupied by two houses and a vacant lot across from Riverview Park. City Administrator Lisa Cotter said the city is still in negotiations with the property owners to arrange the purchase. County grants have been the library's largest source of donations so far, with the single biggest coming from Dubuque County using $1 million in American Rescue Plan Act funds. The City of Cascade matched the amount with a $1 million pledge of its own, with the expectation that efforts would be made to fundraise enough to not have to use the full amount. Over the summer, the Library Building Committee met with Community Foundation of Greater Dubuque, where it was advised of the fundraising process and formed Cascade's Next Chapter, with subcommittees to handle fundraising, events, public relations, and grants. Over the past 2 months, the library received more grant funds, including $60,000 from the Roy J. Carver Charitable Trust. Additionally, $439,000 has been collected in pledges and donations from local businesses, and additional funds were gained from fundraising events. Cotter said the city is applying for an Enhance Iowa grant, which depends on community pledges to be approved. With an application due date of January 15th, officials are focused on meeting with business people for donations before the end of the year, and soon we'll be looking to meet with individuals. We're pleased with the donations and pledges we've received to date, Cotter said. We're reminding people as they reflect on the possibility of donating that this is a once-in-a-lifetime commitment. Cotter said pledged money doesn't need to be paid up front, merely promised to be paid at some point during the library building process. This choice can be marked on pledge forms at City Hall. While the library wants to collect as much as possible by January 15th for the Enhance Iowa grant, Cotter said fundraising likely will continue through April. I think the community support so far has been absolutely amazing, Library Director Melissa Kane said. Being at the last fundraising committee meeting, it really struck me how hard everyone is working toward this. It really touches me. And now we continue with our opinion page and our view, the Friday Quick Takes, which represent the point of view of the Telegraph Herald editorial board. Today we've got two smiley faces, and in between is sort of not a frown, not a smile. But we'll start with a smiley face. New Dubuque Schools bullying reporting site, a positive step. Dubuque County Schools took a big step forward in addressing bullying and harassment at schools, issues that can directly impact brain health for students. Leaders talking to students figured out that though teachers and administrators talk about working to end bullying, the students themselves didn't necessarily know what to do when they saw bullying happening. That meant students tending not to get involved in addressing conflict among their peers. Now, there's an option. Officials recently launched a Say Something page on the district's website containing information about anti-bullying policies and forms for reporting a concern or official complaint. The webpage, which also includes an informational video on the reporting resources available, is accessible from the homepage of each school website and is advertised throughout schools. That's a great idea. It's not all that surprising that some kids might feel uncertainty about whether and how to speak up about incidents of bullying. Kudos to Mimi Holsinger, Director of Behavior and Learning Supports for the district and staff, for listening to kids and devising new ways to be allies to students in need of help. Our second piece is kind of a scrunchy face. The City of Dubuque's interest in improving workplace culture is an admirable goal, particularly at this time when retaining employees poses a challenge in every industry. The city's goal is to help department managers create a work environment that is more equitable and enjoyable. Such a proactive effort makes sense. If there's a downside to this move, it's that it comes with yet another consultant fee. Dubuque City Council members recently voted unanimously to approve a request for proposals seeking a consultant that will help perform 2 years of professional development to improve overall department leadership and employee satisfaction. The 2-year contract is expected to cost the city about $150,000. Most businesses likely would say they too could benefit from this sort of professional development, but most aren't plunking down $150,000 for a consultant. It would seem in an entity as big as the City of Dubuque, with its 700-plus employees, there would be internal expertise that could help facilitate the process. Improving workplace culture in city offices likely will have positive residual effects for Dubuque residents, but the pocketbook impact should be a consideration as well. Our third piece, a smiley face. Hats off to Dyersville resident Mike Murphy, who not only identified a problem in his hometown, but has sought ways to resolve it. Murphy took it upon himself to speak with business owners and Dyersville City Council members about increasing the number of Americans with Disabilities Act parking spaces in town. In many cases, such parking spaces lacked the proper signage and went unchecked. Without the proper signage and painted concrete, handicapped-only parking can't be enforced under Iowa code. Murphy has been out to fix that. Murphy's research shows that just 12 of 94 businesses he observed had properly signed ADA accessible spots, while some 35 had no designated spots at all. Murphy has brought the issue before the city council several times, and at last some businesses are starting to listen and address the shortcoming. While cities aren't tasked with addressing ADA compliance, Murphy's efforts to shine a light on the problem have begun to raise awareness. Murphy, whose wife uses a wheelchair, just wants to see the community be accessible to all. A community salute to Murphy for his effort and for the way he has sought to engage with business owners and leaders to help solve the problem. And we have one letter to the editor today. Let's work together to make our nation better. Barbara Rank, Hidden Oaks Court, Dubuque. Giving thanks for all the election losers who conceded and to the gracious winners as well. Thank you for the voters, poll workers, and candidates who faithfully did their civic duty and for the common decency and respect shown for the rule of law. Thank you for everyone who ran an honest campaign, accepted the will of the people, and put the common good ahead of personal gain or ambition. And now, in the spirit of Christmas, let's work together to make this a better place to live and raise our children in a spirit of unity and goodwill. Amen to that. You are listening to Iris, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped, brought to you in part by DUPACO and the R. W. Hafer Foundation. This is Ken, reading from the Friday, December 2nd edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And we now turn to today's obituaries. Nancy K. Otterbeck. Nancy K. Otterbeck, age 69, of Dubuque, passed away at 2:37 a.m. Tuesday, November 29th, at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics after a sudden illness. To honor Nancy's life, family and friends may visit from 2 p.m. until 4 p.m. Sunday, December 4th, at Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Monday, December 5th, at Bear Funeral Home, with Pastor Joshua Graber officiating. Burial will be in Mount Calvary Cemetery. Nancy was born October 4th, 1953, in Dubuque, daughter of Peter and Dolores Baumhover Gassman. Nancy attended school in Dubuque at Sacred Heart and Wallert. She was united in marriage to Wilbur Otterbeck on February 1st, 1970, in Dubuque. Nancy was a devoted wife and mom who also worked for the city of Dubuque for nearly 40 years. She started as a janitor at City Hall, a meter reader, and finally ran the scales and recycling program at the landfill. She was affectionately known as the Dump Lady, and attained her CDL so that she could run all of the heavy equipment. At one point, she was one of the most hazmat-licensed employees in Dubuque County. It was while working there that she met her cowboy, Tom, and the two formed a special bond. They spent many happy years together. Her grandchildren were her world, and she would do anything she could for her family. She enjoyed reading, gardening, drawing, telling stories, and babysitting all of her grandchildren. She also loved spoiling her beloved little puppy, Coco. Nancy was a wonderful woman who did all she could to make the world around her a better place. She was fierce, bluntly honest, and leaves behind a beautiful legacy of love for her family. Grandma Nancy will be greatly missed by all whose lives she has touched. The family will thankfully receive your support through greeting cards and memorials in Nancy's memory, which may be mailed to Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street, Dubuque, Iowa, 52001. Attention, Nancy Otterbeck family. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.bearfuneralhome.com. Wilfred J. Konzen, Jr. Wilfred J. Fred Konzen, Jr., age 79, of Dubuque, completed his earthly journey November 29th at Stonehill Care Center. To honor Fred's life, a memorial mass will be held on Tuesday, December 6th at 10:30 a.m. at St. Mary's Catholic Church, 170 Montgomery Avenue in East Dubuque, Illinois, with Father Peter Sneeg officiating. Per Fred's request, there will be no public visitation prior to Mass. Burial will be in the East Dubuque Cemetery. Fred was born March 4th, 1943, in Dubuque, Iowa, a son to Wilfred and Goldie Rosenquist Konzen, Sr. He eventually met his soulmate, Carol Plackey, and the couple was united in marriage and were blessed with two sons of their own. Fred took great pride in raising and providing for his family and enjoyed many wonderful years together with Carol until she was sadly called home ahead of him. Fred spent his working years as a supervisor at the Swiss Valley Dairy until retirement finally arrived. In his free time, he always enjoyed watching his Hawkeyes and Bears take the field, or even a little time working on and detailing his cars. Fred was also a longtime member of St. Mary's Church and spent countless hours volunteering as a Eucharistic minister and making sure that those residing in the nursing homes around town were brought communion and visited with regularly. Fred was a generous and outgoing man who always looked for ways to make the world just a little better place for those around him. We will miss Fred more than words could say, and we are forever grateful for the years the Lord was willing to share him with us. Thank you, Fred, for being such a great husband, father, grandfather, and role model for so many to follow, and may peace be yours now and until we meet again. Online condolences may be shared with Fred's family at www.tristatecremationcenter.com. Carol L. Leffelholz, Carol L. Huffleholz, 81, of Dubuque, passed away November 29th. A public visitation will be from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Friday, December 2nd at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. A private family funeral service will be held with burial in Mount Olivet Cemetery. Carol was born December 23rd, 1940, in Dubuque, daughter of Donald and Eleanor Kurtz Botcher. She attended high school at Immaculate Conception Academy. On November 24th, 1962, Carol was united in marriage to Ronald Leffelholz at Holy Trinity Church in Dubuque. She was employed at John Deere, working as an office clerk. Carol was a member of the Dubuque County 4-H Hall of Fame for Leadership and was a member of the MVRA Saddle Club for over 50 years. She was also AQHA certified for breeding quarter horses. For 40 years, her and Ron sold many horses across the United States and other countries. She enjoyed spending time with her family, showing horses, and just being outside on her farm, riding her gator. Joshua J. Taffa, Jr., Hanover, Illinois. Joshua J. Taffa, Jr. of Hanover, passed away unexpectedly November 25th. Friends may call from 1 to 3 p.m. Sunday, December 4th, at the Furlong Funeral Chapel, Galena. Cremation rites will follow the visitation. He was born October 6th, 2000. Joshua grew up with a love for basketball and sharing laughs with family and friends. The name Joshua Juma Taffa means Friday, the leader of a nation was born. He definitely had the ability and capacity to lead. Anyone who knew Josh as a little boy knew what a light he was, always a comedian and oh so very smart. He was able to befriend anyone without prejudice and knew how to lighten a room with the gleam in his eyes and his infectious smile. Josh was very passionate. When he loved with all of his heart. Oftentimes, when his love and loyalty were not reciprocated, it manifested itself as aggression. But at its core, it was his intense capacity to love. Elvira Kroger, Dyersville. Elvira Vera Kroger, 92, of Dyersville, died Thursday, December 1st. Visitation will be held from 2 to 6 p.m. Sunday, December 4th, at Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville. Mass of Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Monday, December 5th, at St. Xavier Basilica in Dyersville. Burial will be in the church cemetery. Arthur F. Barnhart, Asbury. Arthur F. Barnhart, 95, of Asbury, died Thursday, December 1st. Visitation will be held from 1 to 4 p.m. Sunday, December 4th, and from 9 to 10:30 a.m. Monday, December 5th, at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, where services will follow. Burial will be in Asbury Cemetery. Eileen M. Pins, Dyersville. Eileen M. Pins, 95, of Dyersville, died Wednesday, November 30th. Arrangements are pending. Reif Funeral Home of Dyersville is assisting the family. Steve K. Markov, Platteville. Steve K. Markov, 69, of Platteville, died Wednesday, November 30th. No services will be held. Howden Shield Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Cuba City is assisting the family. Well, for today's new arrivals, we have only one. Thursday, December 1st, Hoffman, Dustin and Ashley Hoffman of Hazel Green, a girl at Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center. Welcome, little one, to this amazing world. We also have just one small piece of news and brief on this page. One taken to hospital following two-vehicle crash in Dubuque. One person was taken to the hospital following a two-vehicle crash Wednesday in Dubuque. K.A. Conrady, 72, of Dubuque, was transported by ambulance to Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center for treatment, according to police. The crash occurred at about 5:40 p.m. Wednesday at the intersection of Kaufman and Hempstead Street. Police said Conradi was traveling west on Kaufman when she attempted to turn left onto Hempstead, and her vehicle collided with a vehicle driven east on Kaufman by Kenneth J. Ostert, 38, of Dubuque. Conradi was cited with failure to yield upon making a left turn. We have another little bit of tri-state news. UWP offers free meat industry program from Platteville. University of Wisconsin-Platteville has a new free program for college and high school students interested in the meat industry thanks to a recent state investment. This week, UWP announced the Beginning a Career in the Meat Industry program, a half-day course designed for students who want to learn about jobs in the meat sector. The free course is funded by the statewide Meat Talent Development Program. This program will provide high school students throughout the state with invaluable classroom training, said Krista Eisman, program lead. Getting high school and college students interested in the meat industry is a strong step in continuing to bolster our meat industry workforce. There will be two free sessions, one on January 10th at UWP and one January 17th at UWP's Baraboo branch location. The workshops begin at 1 p.m. and end at 4:30 p.m. The course will go over career opportunities, resume building, and the importance of sanitation and food safety. Additional information on registration and exact locations soon will be available on the UWP School of Agriculture website. Any questions about the course can be directed to Eiserman at 608-342-7375. I'm going to read today's Flashback Friday. We don't often have time for this, but we do today, and I think it's an important one. It begins with a picture of a number of gentlemen looking intently at the camera, and behind them is a big motorhome. And beneath it, it reads, Jack Sauvel, foreground, president of Tri-State Vietnam Veterans Association, and other veterans prepared to board a motorhome in 1982 to travel to Washington, D.C. for the dedication of a Vietnam Veterans Memorial. That's correct. This is the 40th anniversary. Our article reads, 1982, local veterans prepared to visit D.C. for Vietnam Memorial dedication. The men were sitting around a table in the back room of Happy's Place. On the backs of their chairs hung several green military-issue field jackets, bright yellow windbreakers emblazoned with their club's name, the Tri-States Vietnam Veterans Association, were draped over others. Association President Jack Sauvel discussed their trip to the Vietnam Veterans Memorial dedication ceremony. We've had a solid request to take some pictures of the names of some of our fallen brothers from the area, he said. I'm sure we'll all want to get down to that memorial. There are names I want to see, too. The memorial, two black granite-faced walls shaped in a V in front of the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C., will be dedicated Thursday. The walls bear the names of the 57,709 Americans who died or were listed as missing in action during this country's 11-year involvement in the Southeast Asian War. A 13-member delegation from the Tri-State chapter of the association, supported by almost $1,000 in donations from local businesses, will attend the three-day ceremonies. They are excited about the trip, although suspicious of some parts of the celebration, such as the show business salute to Vietnam veterans that cost $28 for admission. Their trip in a motorhome and car caravan is something of a pilgrimage. In addition to a parade, reunions, and the entertainer's salute, most of the men want to visit the wall to be alone for a little while with their thoughts and their names. There's going to be some traumatic moments, said retired Marine Daryl Allman, 33, of Dubuque. When I rotated back stateside, I left a lot of guys over there. All this time, I've never known what happened to them. Allman was a field radio operator with the 7th Marine Regiment from January 69 to January 70. He already knows one particular name will be on the wall. The guy that talked to me into joining got killed over there, Allman said. I want to see his name. Ex-Army helicopter gunner David LaRue also has names to find. LaRue, 33, a local landscape designer, served with the 48th Assault Helicopter Company from 1970 to 1971. He said that, despite criticism of the wall's design, the memorial is an important one. Some people have called it a massive wailing wall, he said. They're right. It's going to be a hard wall for most of us to look at. We'll pick up a few pieces of our news in brief. Joe Davies County man sentenced to 3 years in prison for threatening to kill officer family. Warren, Illinois. A Joe Davies County man this week was sentenced to 3 years in prison for threatening to kill a police officer and his family. Michael R. Euler, 43, of Warren, was sentenced by Judge Kevin Ward in Joe Davies County Circuit Court after pleading guilty to a felony count of threatening a public official as part of a plea deal, according to County State's Attorney Chris Ollendorf. Euler was given credit for 29 days already served in jail. He must serve 1 year of mandatory supervised release, formerly called parole, after his prison term. Court documents state that on October 31st, Euler threatened to kill Warren police officer Andrew Gray, put a knife in Officer Gray's throat, and slit his throat, skin Officer Gray alive, and put a bullet in Officer Gray's children's heads. Oh my goodness. Health officials report cases of new COVID-19 variant in Dubuque County. Cases of a new coronavirus have been reported in Dubuque County. Omicron BQ1.1 is among a group of COVID-19 subvariants that exhibit a high level of immune evasiveness, according to the Dubuque County Public Health Incident Management Team, which announced this week that the variant had been confirmed in the county for the first time. Immune evasiveness means that the virus can evade or escape detection by antibodies, according to a press release. Nationally, BQ1.1 makes up 29.4% of COVID-19 cases. Not much is known about those two variants, but the severity and duration of disease seem similar to the other Omicrons and milder than the original and Delta variants, states USA Today. Dubuque receives high ranking on LGBTQ advocacy group's inclusivity index. An LGBTQ advocacy group gave Dubuque a high ranking in its annual index of the inclusivity of the city's laws, policies, and services, though the mark was lower than the previous 4 years. Dubuque earned a 95 score out of 100 in the Human Rights Campaign's 2022 Municipal Equality Index, according to a press release. The group ranks cities on a scale from 0 to 100 based upon 49 criteria covering non-discrimination laws, municipal leadership positions on equality, and other measures, according to the release. Other 2022 scores for cities in Iowa included Cedar Rapids, Davenport, and Iowa City, all at 100, Des Moines at 96, and Waterloo at 61. Dubuque had received a score of 100 during the previous 4 years. A full report is available online at hrc.org/MEI. Spilled sheet metal temporarily impacts traffic on US 151 in Grant County. From Hazel Green. Officials said a commercial vehicle lost a load of sheet metal on US 151 in Grant County, just outside of Dubuque, on Thursday morning, impacting traffic for hours. Southbound traffic on the highway was reduced to one lane between mile marker 1 and the Dubuque-Wisconsin Bridge after the load spillage that occurred just before 7 a.m., according to Wisconsin State Patrol. Sheriff Nate Dreckman wrote in an email that Sheriff's Department deputies worked with firefighters and the county highway shop to divert traffic while the load was cleared. No injuries or damage were reported as a result of the incident. The highway fully reopened by 11:40 a.m. I don't often have this much time left. There's not a lot of news in today's paper, but I would like to share the Ask Amy column today. I think it might be relevant for a lot of people out there thinking and wondering.
Abuse survivor deserves validation. Dear Amy, my parents divorced when I was 7, after my mother had an affair with one of my father's employees. He was much younger and a registered sex offender, but my mother moved him into our house immediately. He started commenting on my breasts at a very early age. When I was 14, he offered to give me lessons on sex. At age 16, he was relentlessly commenting on my body, and when I finally had enough and yelled at him to stop, my mother grounded me for being disrespectful. At age 17, he exposed himself and performed a sex act in front of me. I left home at age 17. I told my mother that I was very hurt that she never told him to stop the sexual abuse. She screamed at me and said that I am too sensitive and that I was never sexually abused because her boyfriend, now husband, never actually touched me. I'm 50 years old now, and I have had difficulty with intimacy my whole adult life. My mother blames me for turning her life upside down because I tried to hurt myself when I was 10 because I felt so terrible and dirty. I attempted suicide at age 16 because I felt like I was destined to be her husband's toy. My family claims that this was not abuse because he didn't rape me. I have been to therapy, and I have done a lot of work on myself. Amy, I have felt useless and dirty since I was 10 years old. Was I abused, or am I just not able to have an intimate relationship because of my own bad behavior? Still wondering. Dear wondering, you have a lingering and necessary desire for validation. This is a direct result of your family's choice of continuously denying the traumatic experiences you were subjected to throughout your childhood. Yes, you were abused. Your mother's husband attempted to groom you throughout your childhood. Exposing himself and performing a sex act in front of you is a crime. Read some of the harrowing accounts of adult women traumatized by Harvey Weinstein doing what this man did to you, and you will see the long-term and devastating impact of this kind of sexual misconduct and abuse. Weinstein is currently on trial for rape. His criminal behavior also included exposing himself and performing a sex act in front of women. You were a child. No one protected you at the time, and they are not protecting you now. Your abuser robbed you of your self-esteem. Survivors of sexual abuse often struggle with trust and intimacy. This response is a natural reaction of you continuing to protect yourself the way you had to do all during childhood. I hope you will continue with therapy. RAINN.org offers many valuable services to abuse survivors, including a 24/7 online chat line where you can contact a counselor. The survivor stories featured on their site include stories much like yours, told by stalwart survivors who report many of the feelings and reactions you are also experiencing. It is important that you understand that you are not, in all capitals, you are not alone. Being older, though I am still quite happy with my partner of 55-some years, this is a cute one. Dear Amy, I am a 62-year-old man. I am seeking a new relationship with a woman. What is age appropriate for me when I'm looking for a new partner? Aged out, he calls himself. Dear aged out, you and I are the same age, roughly described as, in quotes, I'm anyone who will have me years old. Age is less important than maturity, and in that regard, life experience, work ethic, responsibility, and reliability are all core values to consider, regardless of the other person's age. Amen. Well, we'll come to a conclusion now with our weekend buzz, the noteworthy things to do. Merry Millwork Market. Today and Saturday, Dubuque Millwork District, 4 to 8 p.m. today, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday. Live music, local vendors, and more will be at the annual fundraiser for the Dubuque Millwork Collective. Food and drink available for purchase. Admission free. More information, www.merrymillworkmarket.com. Lancaster Area Chamber of Commerce's Night of Frosty Cheer,
Today, downtown Lancaster, 5 to 7 p.m., a chili cook-off, wagon rides, free activities, and a tree lighting ceremony, followed by an appearance of Santa Claus. Food, drinks, and gifts will be available for purchase. Admission is free. Annual Christmas Tree Lighting, Saturday, Carnegie Stout Public Library, 360 West 11th, 2 to 3 p.m. The library's 18-foot-tall Christmas tree lighting will be accompanied by Dubuque Senior High School's Madrigal Singers. A children's raffle, holiday refreshments, and sing-alongs also will be featured. Admission is free. You can get details at carnegiestout.org. Christmas at the Fort, Saturday, Apple River Fort, 311 East Myrtle Street in Elizabeth. 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Experience a typical frontier German Christmas complete with a decorated fir tree. The event is outdoors, so dress warmly. Admission is free, but donations are welcome. Information 815-858-2028. Dubuque Symphony Orchestra Holiday Family Concert, Saturday, Five Flags Theater, 1 to 2 p.m. Vocalist Katie Richter, Dubuque Chorale Children's Choir, and members of Heartland Ballet join the DSO for its annual family-friendly program. Admission, $14 to $34. Tickets, Ticketmaster.com. More information, www.dubuquesymphony.org. Scuba Santa. Saturday and Sunday, the National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium at 350 West 3rd. 11 a.m. to noon, both days. This year, Santa will be in the Main Channel Aquarium. Admission free with a museum admission. More information, 563-557-9545. Scuba Santa will be featured again at the National Museum, River Museum and Aquarium this weekend. And we have volunteer Tommy Walu. We have see a hand with a star on hanging an ornament on the Christmas tree at the Carnegie Stout Public Library in Dubuque on Wednesday. The tree lighting again is going to be on Saturday. Well, my friends, listeners, whomever is out there, 2 o'clock or so, it's been a delight. It always is. But this brings us to the end of the reading of the Friday, December 2nd edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald, read to you by my Friday faithful voice of Ken. And remember, this is brought to you by IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped, a service Monday through Friday from the Telegraph Herald, but there is so much more that you can get from IRIS. So tune in. Find out what else is out there, get the program lineups, and have an enjoyable time listening, especially as the weather eventually, I think, gets a lot colder than it has been. It's going to be warming up a day or so, then it's going to get cold again. Hard to predict. But we're into December, and we're in the Midwest, so we know it's not going to be 80 degrees. So thank you all for your listening. Take care of yourselves this weekend and in the week ahead. And until next Friday. So long.